Getting back to Sargon's early life, other stories record that Sargon had a dream while he was still in the service of Urzababa, the king of Kish. And according to this story, Sargon dreamt that the goddess Inanna killed Urzababa, thus justifying the god's displeasure with the ruler. Therefore, if Sargon actually did assassinate Urzababa, he would just be the agent of the gods, as predicted in this dream. There's a great detail from this story that shows the importance of diplomatic secrecy. The story reports, in those days, writing on tablets did exist, but clay envelopes did not exist. King Urzababa wrote a tablet for Sargon, creature of the gods, which would cause his own death, and dispatched it to Lugal-zaggezi in Uruk, another king whom Sargon will come into contact with. So we see that Sargon, this is a sort of an early espionage story where Urzababa may have felt some threat from Sargon, and he wrote about it trying to get help from a co-ruler in Uruk, Lugal-zaggezi. Sargon saw it because it was not sealed in an envelope. Sargon's Akkadian name, Shahrukin, means the true or legitimate king, an overstatement that suggests he in fact had no real claim to the throne. After coming to the throne of Kish, Sargon quickly attacked and defeated the powerful king of Uruk, Lugal-zaggezi, just reported as an ally of Urzababa. Lugal-zaggezi led a coalition of 50 ensis, and you remember that an ensi is some sort of governor of a city. You may also recall that we met Lugal-zaggezi when he made very splashy dedications to Enlil at Nippur. Lugal-zaggezi noted in an inscription on a silver vessel that he controlled the land east and west. And this was a change in goal from the small-scale border conflicts, such as that we discussed between Umma and Lagash. So now rulers are trying to not just get more agricultural land, but to control a territory. Sargon's main accomplishments stemmed from his military achievements, and these expeditions took him east to Iran, apparently as far west as Lebanon, to the north in Anatolia, and finally to the south of Mesopotamia, which allowed him to unite the two regions. Inscriptions contemporary to Sargon's reign note that the god Dagon, who is the god of grain, gave him the upper Euphrates regions, including Ebla and Mari, the trading cities in Syria that we have discussed, and that he controlled the land west to the Cedar Mountains, which would be Lebanon. Keep in mind that in previous lectures we've talked about diplomatic connections between Mesopotamia and Ebla and Mari. Now this has turned to a more military control of the regions with the reign of Sargon. The copper head of an Akkadian ruler, perhaps Sargon from the Iraq Museum, that we discussed in the first lecture was found at Nineveh in northern Mesopotamia. Later stories about Sargon offer much more detailed descriptions of his campaigns, but these, as already discussed, may not be especially reliable. A partially preserved epic poem about Sargon reports both his skill and his ambition in battle. A ruler of an Anatolian area tells a group of Mesopotamian merchants that Sargon would never travel so far to protect them. He says, "Sargon will not come as far as we are. Riverbank and high water will surely prevent him. The massive mountain will surely make a reed thicket." When Sargon did arrive and successfully besieged the city, his enemy conceded to him, saying, "No doubt your gods brought your soldiers across. What lands could rival Akkad? What king could rival you? Your opponents' hearts are seared. They are terrified and left paralyzed with fear." I want you to keep this in mind as we discuss later rulers, especially the Assyrians, who believed that just the presence of the king could cause an opponent's city or army to immediately surrender. So we get the first hints of that idea with Sargon. As always, divine support for a king's rule was necessary, and Sargon claimed that as well.